Let's see if it's going. Okay, we're recording. All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to Course in Miracles. I'm Lynn, the facilitator, and we have Nanette on the line, and Carrie, and Jim, and Dee. Hello, everyone. Thank you for calling in to be readers today. I want everybody to listen to your breath for just a minute, because there's a lot of things going on in everyone's lives. We're going through a huge shift, not only in seasons, but also in things that are going on around us, and it seems to be a little stressful for a lot of people. So I want everybody to take a deep breath in, hold it for just a second, and then slowly release. And pay attention to your feet, your toes, your shoulders, and just kind of relax just a little bit. Know that everything is perfect, everything's as it should be, and that anything that is happening to you today, is all perfect and needs to be for where you need to be in your life. I have a reading called Be Still. Often we grudgingly and hurriedly move from one activity to the next, feeling out of time and short of breath. Is there really that much to do? Some of us keep ourselves busy in order to feel worthwhile. If that's the case, let's remember that that's the ego, not your real self, that perceives lack of worth. We simply need a change of mind now, and then we can rest. The stillness awaits us. In the stillness, we heal. Beginning each day with a time of stillness gives us a chance to remember the Holy Spirit, that no guarantee that we will not be ruled by the ego in the next hour, but each recollection makes the next one much easier. Practice makes it natural to turn to the Holy Spirit for the guidance and peace we deserve. We need not be busy all the time. We need not be busy ever, in fact. It's our choice to be peaceful or too busy. We'll do a better job of the former if we've been still for just a few moments. Going peacefully through today is easiest if I'd had some quiet time with the Holy Spirit. Remember, no matter what's going on in your life, you have the choice to be still. Acceptance is a big thing for maintaining peace. We are reading in the text of Course in Miracles. We're on chapter 2, which is talking about the separation and the atonement, or the at-one-ment. We have now reached, in my book, page 19, Roman numeral 2, the atonement as defense.
This is Nanette, and you're just going to have to wait on me, or you guys can go ahead and I'll...
That's fine.
...get there when I get there, because I wasn't here last week, so I don't even have last week marked.
I think it's on page 37, Nanette, of our book. And it is number 2, Roman number 2, the atonement as defense.
Oh, please let it be. I've got it. Yay. Thank you.
All right. Great. Carrie, would you start out? Let's have a male voice start this, the atonement as defense.
Okay. Will do. The atonement as defense. You can do anything I ask. I have asked you to perform miracles and have made it clear that miracles are natural, corrective, healing, and universal. There is nothing they cannot do, but they cannot be performed in the spirit of doubt or fear. When you are afraid of anything, you are acknowledging its power to hurt you. Remember that where your heart is, there is your treasure also. You believe in what you value. If you are afraid, you are valuing wrongly. Your understanding will then inevitably value wrongly, and by endowing all thoughts with equal power, will inevitably destroy peace. That is why the Bible speaks of the peace of God which passeth understanding. This peace is totally incapable of being shaken by errors of any kind. It denies the ability of anything not of God to affect you. This is the proper use of denial. It is not used to hide anything, but to correct error. It brings all error into the light, and since error and darkness are the same, it corrects error automatically.
Thanks. D, would you like to read next, please?
True denial is a power protective device. You can and should deny any beliefs that error can hurt you. This kind of denial is not a concealment, but a correction. Your right mind depends on it. Denial of error is a strong defense of truth, but denial of truth results in a miscreation, the projections of the ego. In service of the right mind, the denial of error frees the mind and reestablishes the freedom of the will. When the will is really free, it cannot miscreate because it recognizes only truth.
Thanks. Jim?
You can defend truth as well as error. The means are easier to understand after the value of the goal is firmly established. It is a question of what it is for. Everyone defends his treasure and will do so automatically. The real questions are, what do you treasure and how much do you treasure it? Once you have learned to consider these questions and to bring them all into all your actions, you will have little difficulty in clarifying the meaning. The means are available whenever you ask. You can, however, save time if you do not protract the step unduly. The correct focus will shorten it immeasurably.
Great. The atonement is the only defense that cannot be used destructively because it is not a device you made. The atonement principle was in effect long before the atonement began. The principle was love, and the atonement was an act of love. Acts were not necessary before the separation because belief in space and time did not exist. It was only after the separation that the atonement and the conditions necessary for its fulfillment were planned. Then a defense so splendid was needed that it could not be misused, although it could be refused. Refusal could not, however, turn it into a weapon of attack, which is the inherent characteristic of other defenses. The atonement thus becomes the only defense that is not a two-edged sword. It can only heal. Nanette?
The atonement was built into the space-time belief to set a limit on the need for the belief itself and ultimately to make learning complete. The atonement is the final lesson. Learning itself, like the classrooms in which it occurs, is temporary. The ability to learn has no value when change is no longer necessary. The eternally creative have nothing to learn. You can learn to improve your perceptions and become a better and better learner. This will bring you into closer and closer accord with the sonship. But the sonship itself is a perfect creation, and perfection is not a matter of degree. Only while there is a belief in differences is learning meaningful.
Great. Are there any questions up to now or any comments upon how the atonement began and what we're reading? Okay. Kira, you want to go ahead?
Sure. Evolution is a process in which you seem to proceed from one degree to the next. You correct your previous missteps by stepping forward. This process is actually incomprehensible in temporal terms because you return as you go forward. The atonement is the device by which you can free yourself from the past as you go ahead. It undoes your past errors, thus making it unnecessary for you to keep retracing your steps without advancing to your return. In this sense, the atonement saves time, but like the miracle it serves, does not abolish it. As long as there is need for atonement, there is need for time. But the atonement as a completed plan has a unique relationship to time. Until the atonement is complete, its various phases will proceed in time, but the whole atonement stands at time's end. At that point, the bridge of return has been built.
The atonement is a total commitment. You may still think this is associated with loss, a mistake all the separated sons of God make in one way or another. It is hard to believe a defense that cannot attack is the best defense. This is what is meant by the meek shall inherit the earth. They will literally take it over because of their strength. A two-way defense is inherently weak precisely because it has two edges and can be turned against you very unexpectedly. This possibility cannot be controlled except by miracles. The miracle turns the defense of the atonement to your real protection. As you become more and more secure, you assume your natural talent of protecting others, knowing yourself as both a brother and a son.
Thanks. All right. Can somebody kind of sum that up a little bit?
Well, I was noticing we're talking about time collapsing in a miracle, and that this is a course in mind training, so we're learning how to do that by making our connection with God or with divine, with source. That's kind of what I got out of it.
Mm-hmm. How is it atonement used as defense?
There is no need for defense if you're at one with God.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. The atonement is a total commitment, which means the atonement needs to be in place at all times. The atonement, you are at one at all times. All right, thank you. Jim, go ahead with the altar of God.
Yes, okay. The atonement can only be accepted within you by releasing the inner light. Since the separation, defenses have been used almost entirely to defend against the atonement and thus maintain the separation. This is generally seen as a need to protect the body. The many body fantasies in which minds engage arise from the distorted belief that the body can be used as a means for attaining atonement. Perceiving the body as a temple is only the first step in correcting this distortion, because it alters only part of it. It does recognize that atonement in physical terms is impossible. The next step, however, is to realize that the temple is not a structure at all. Its true holiness lies at the inner altar around which the structure is built. The emphasis on beautiful structures is a sign of the fear of atonement. And an unwillingness to reach the altar itself. The real beauty of the temple cannot be seen with the physical eye. Spiritual sight, on the other hand, cannot see the structure at all because it is perfect vision. It can, however, see the altar with perfect clarity.
For perfect effectiveness, the atonement belongs at the center of the inner altar, where it undoes the separation and restores the wholeness of the mind. Before the separation, the mind was invulnerable to fear because fear did not exist. Both the separation and the fear are miscreations that must be undone for the restoration of the temple and for the opening of the altar to receive the atonement. This heals the separation by placing within you the one effective defense against all separation thoughts and making you perfectly invulnerable.
The acceptance of the atonement by everyone is only a matter of time. This may appear to contradict free will because of the inevitability of the final decision, but this is not so. You can temporize, and you are capable of enormous procrastination, but you cannot depart entirely from your Creator, who set the limits on your ability to miscreate. An imprisoned will engenders a situation which, in the extreme, becomes altogether intolerable. Tolerance for pain may be high, but it is not without limit. Eventually, everyone begins to recognize, however dimly, that there must be a better way. As this recognition becomes more firmly established, it becomes a turning point. This ultimately reawakens spiritual vision, simultaneously weakening the investment in physical sight. The alternating investment in the two levels of perception is usually experienced as conflict, which can become very acute, but the outcome is as certain as God.
Spiritual vision literally cannot see error and merely looks for atonement. All solutions the physical eye seeks dissolve. Spiritual vision looks within and recognizes immediately that the altar has been defiled and needs to be repaired and protected. Perfectly aware of the right defense, it passes over all others, looking past error to truth. Because of the strength of its vision, it brings the mind into its service. This reestablishes the power of the mind and makes it increasingly unable to tolerate delay, realizing that it only adds unnecessary pain. As a result, the mind becomes increasingly sensitive to what it would once have regarded as very minor intrusions of discomfort.
The children of God are entitled to the perfect comfort that comes from perfect trust. Until they achieve this, they waste themselves and their true creative powers on useless attempts to make themselves more comfortable by inappropriate means. But the real means are already provided and do not involve any effort at all on their part. The atonement is the only gift that is worthy of being offered at the altar of God because of the value of the altar itself. It was created perfect and is entirely worthy of receiving perfection. God and his creations are completely dependent on each other. He depends on them because he created them perfect. He gave them his peace so they could not be shaken and could not be deceived. Whenever you are afraid, you are deceived, and your mind cannot serve the Holy Spirit. This starves you by denying you your daily bread. God is lonely without his sons, and they are lonely without him. They must learn to look upon the world as a means of healing the separation. The atonement is the guarantee that they will ultimately succeed.
Right. Perfect. What does this mean to you? What does this tell you?
Well, this is Dee, and it tells me that I have been perhaps turning the wrong way in dealing with my fears, and I certainly have had a few this week. So it shows me that rather than turning to making plans and trying to figure things out, that I should be turning inwardly. I don't know. It might be a multi-prong approach. At this point, turn inwardly and make a plan.
I think you're reading that very accurately for you. I really do. I really do. How many of us have reached a point in our lives where we've become so frustrated, so hurtful, so in pain that we've thought, gosh, there must be a better way. I can't do this anymore. And you finally, some people say hitting bottom. I don't know that you have to actually hit bottom. But you become so much in pain that you realize that there's got to be a better way. Most of us at that point turn to self-help or therapists or medication. Some of us go into other things to make us more comfortable, thinking if we were just more comfortable, like alcohol addiction, or other addictions that we come to, or being too busy, or all sorts of things to settle us down, to make us feel better, and realize that it doesn't work. doesn't work. What does work? There, when everyone begins to recognize, however dimly, that there must be a better way, it becomes your turning point. It ultimately reawakens your spiritual vision. Oh, alcohol doesn't do it for me. Working 20 hours a day doesn't do it for me. We need to find our spiritual solution. We need to look inside. You're not going to find things on the outside to make you feel better, to bring you that perfect peace, that perfect comfort that comes from perfect trust. We waste our true creative powers on useless attempts to make ourselves comfortable by inappropriate means. And what all do we need? It's very simple. What all do we need?
You just need to trust and let go.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. The atonement is the only gift that is worthy of being offered. You're at one. You're at one with God. Trust. Trust. That is your daily bread. Being at one with God is your daily bread. Beautiful. All right. Healing as release from fear.
And I think I was next.
I think you are.
Our emphasis is now on healing. The miracle is the means, the atonement is the principle, and healing is the result. To speak of a miracle of healing is to combine two orders of reality inappropriately. Healing is not a miracle. The atonement, or the final miracle, is a remedy, and any type of healing as a result. The kind of error to which atonement is applied is irrelevant. All healing is essentially the release from fear. To undertake this, you cannot be fearful yourself. Do not understand healing because of your own fear.
A major step in the atonement plan is to undo error at all levels. Sickness, or not right-mindedness, is the result of a level confusion, because it always entails the belief that what is amiss on one level can adversely affect another. We have referred to miracles as the means of correcting level confusion, for all mistakes must be corrected at the level of which they occur. Only the mind is capable of error. The body can act wrongly only when it is responding to misthought. The body cannot create, and the belief that it can, a fundamental error, produces all physical symptoms. Physical illness represents a belief in magic. The whole distortion that made magic rests on the belief that there is a creative ability in matter which the mind cannot control. This error can take two forms. It can be believed that the mind can miscreate in the body, or that the body can miscreate in the mind. When it is understood that the mind, the only level of creation, cannot create beyond itself, neither type of confusion need occur.
Only the mind can create because spirit has already been created. And the body is a learning device for the mind. Learning devices are not lessons in themselves. Their purpose is merely to facilitate learning. The worst a faulty use of a learning device can do is to fail to facilitate learning. It has no power in itself to introduce actual learning errors. The body, if properly understood, shares the invulnerability of the atonement to two-edged application. This is not because the body is a miracle, but because it is not inherently open to misinterpretation. The body is merely part of your experience in the physical world. Its abilities can be and frequently are over-evaluated. However, it is almost impossible to deny its existence in this world. Those who do so are engaging in a particularly unworthy form of denial. The term unworthy here implies only that it is not necessary to protect the mind by denying the unmindful. If one denies this unfortunate aspect of the mind's power, one is also denying the power itself.
All material means that you accept as remedies for bodily ills are restatements of magic principles. This is the first step in believing that the body makes its own illness. It is a second misstep to attempt to heal it through non-creative agents. It does not follow, however, that the use of such agents for corrective purposes is evil. Sometimes the illness has a sufficiently strong hold over the mind to render a person temporarily inaccessible to the atonement. In this case, it may be wise to utilize a compromise approach to mind and body, in which something from the outside is temporarily given healing belief. This is because the last thing that can help the non-right-minded or the sick is an increase in fear. They are already in a fear-weakened state. If they are prematurely exposed to a miracle, they may be precipitated into panic. This is likely to occur when upside-down perception has induced the belief that miracles are frightening.
The value of the atonement does not lie in the manner in which it is expressed. In fact, if it is used truly, it will inevitably be expressed in whatever way is most helpful to the receiver. This means that a miracle to attain its full efficacy must be expressed in a language that the recipient can understand without fear. This does not necessarily mean that this is the highest level of communication of which he is capable. It does mean, however, that it is the highest level of communication of which he is capable now. The whole aim of the miracle is to raise the level of communication, not to lower it by increasing fear.
Okay. Any comments on healing as a release from fear?
It's interesting. It kind of implies that, you know, if you have a headache, it's okay to take aspirin.
Sure. Sure. And if you know somebody who is temporarily inaccessible to the atonement because their mind is so loaded in fear or is incapable of understanding it, it's okay to take medicine to be able to work that mind so that you have more clarity. And an example would be a person who is so depressed that they need medication. And that's okay. Course in Miracles is not against medication, but it also says that you don't always need it. But if you need it right now, it's okay. But that's only temporary. It's only temporary. What you really need is to work on raising your level of communication to be able to receive the lessons, not to have more increased fear, which will take you farther down.
This is Nanette, and I wanted to make a comment real quick. I also read this, you know, the medication implication, as it were, as a metaphorical thing, too, because, like, for instance, I'd say the last week has been kind of a rough week for me. And if someone were to come up to me and say, Nanette, you need to just let it go and move on. Or, Nanette, let me read you this paragraph out of Course in Miracles. That, to me, is like, there's a timing. There's timing involved. And it, you know, it's a kindness timing. And it doesn't happen very often that somebody will say something like that to me. But when you're in the middle of the storm, and Dee and I were actually talking about this the other day. I can't even remember what we were talking about. But we were talking about if you're in the middle of the storm and the roof is coming off, you don't tell them how to repair the roof at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I see that this whole thing, you know, like if you're in that middle of that fear, there's self-timing as well as outside timing is on how to get through the storm, as it were. And the other thing I thought was interesting about this part is I don't remember where it was, but it talked about somebody possibly being fearful of a miracle. And I have to say that's the first time I've ever heard of that.
I know people that are fearful. They've made their illness their way of life. They don't want to change that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it means?
A lot of people. Yeah.
The fearful of miracles?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. On number three, it says learning devices are not lessons in themselves. What are they talking about, learning devices? Their purpose is merely to facilitate learning.
I think any situation, for example, my last couple of weeks with the bear is a learning situation indeed.
Mm-hmm.
So it pulls up that opportunity to examine your fear.
Right. 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 And the worst a faulty use of a learning device can do is to fail to facilitate learning. You can float through this experience, Dee, and
mm-hmm.
do what you would normally be doing and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is that when you don't take a look at it to how you can learn from this and
mm-hmm.
where you can look at the atonement with this, that's when you failed in learning.
Right.
You need to take a look at every situation as a lesson of making your life better, making your life more at peace, making your life happier.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, if you're not in a state of happiness and of peace, something's wrong. So look at every situation as a wonderful learning experience. And remember to learn from it. Don't just walk through life feeling your headaches, feeling the pain that's coming, realizing that your body's in pain, and not realizing that there's something imbalanced in your mind that is causing it. And what is that learning experience? Why do you have pain? Why are you imbalanced? Take a look at it. What are your fearful thoughts surrounding it? Are you living in the future? What if this happens? There is no future. The only time is now. So where do I need to be right now? What do I need to see right now? What do I need to look at right now? Find your fear and then realize that it's your mind that has created it. And once you have released your mind from your fear, you can be healed. All right.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
In Dee's case with the bear
mm-hmm.
that attempted to break in,
mm-hmm.
there's got to be some common sense that comes into play. You know, that if the bear's broken in, and the bear's been seen, and the bear was outside her house last night, wouldn't action be appropriate?
What action do you need?
To have the bear removed?
You could. That will eliminate some of the problem. But why are you afraid of the bear?
I'm afraid that my friend's daughter is at risk walking around where they live.
You're putting out your fear into the universe to create something. How strong is that thought? Preemptive measures are to satisfy your fear at the moment. Is that the lesson that we need?
What are your fears creating? Whatever you focus on, you're going to create. The Native Americans would say,
I was going to say, here's what's funny. I have been putting a whole lot of thought into these bears leaving and finding food in the middle of the forest, visualizing it, giving it energy, giving it love. That has been my thought.
Great.
That's where I'm trying to be in the moment. But this bear is not taking my lead here.
No, he's not paying any attention, is he?
No, he's not.
So what is that lesson?
I don't really know.
Okay. All right. Let's continue reading.
Okay.
But I want you to take a look at why this is all happening. What is this having to do with your fear? What I was going to say is that in Native American thinking, a lot of times, you have to become one with the bear. That's also an atonement. The bear is no different than your brother. All right, let's go on reading. The function of the miracle worker.
I think it's back to me.
Okay.
Before miracle workers are ready to undertake their function in this world, it is essential that they fully understand the fear of release. Otherwise, they may unwittingly foster the belief that release is imprisonment, a belief that is already very prevalent. This misperception arises in turn from the belief that harm can be limited to the body. This is because of the underlying fear that the mind can hurt itself. None of these errors is meaningful because the miscreations of the mind do not really exist. This recognition is a far better protective device than any form of level confusion because it introduces correction at the level of the error. It is essential to remember that only the mind can create and that correction belongs at the thought level. To amplify an earlier statement, spirit is already perfect and therefore does not require correction. The body does not exist except as a learning device for the mind. This learning device is not subject to errors of its own because it cannot create. It is obvious, then, that inducing the mind to give up its miscreations is the only application of creative ability that is truly meaningful.
Magic is the mindless or the miscreative use of the mind. Physical medication are forms of spells, but if you are afraid to use the mind to heal, you should not attempt to do so. The very fact that you are afraid makes your mind vulnerable to miscreation. You are therefore likely to misunderstand any healing that might occur, and because egocentricity and fear usually occur together, you may be unable to accept the real source of the healing. Under these conditions, it is safer for you to rely temporarily on physical healing devices because you cannot misperceive them as your own creations. As long as your sense of vulnerability persists, you should not attempt to perform miracles.
I have already said that miracles are expressions of miracle-mindedness. And miracle-mindedness means right-mindedness. The right-minded neither exalt nor depreciate the mind of the miracle worker or the miracle receiver. However, as a correction, the miracle need not await the right-mindedness of the receiver. In fact, its purpose is to restore him to his right mind. It is essential, however, that the miracle worker be in his right mind, however briefly, or he will be unable to reestablish right-mindedness in someone else.
The healer who relies on his own readiness is endangering his understanding. You are perfectly safe as long as you are completely unconcerned about your readiness, but maintain a consistent trust in mine. If your miracle-working inclinations are not functioning properly, it is always because fear has intruded on your right-mindedness and has turned it upside down. All forms of not right-mindedness are the result of refusal to accept the atonement for yourself. If you do not accept it, you are in a position to recognize that those who need healing, if you do accept it, you are in a position to recognize that those who need healing are simply those who have not realized that right-mindedness is healing.
The sole responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself. This means you recognize that mind is the only creative level and that its errors are healed by the atonement. Once you accept this, your mind can only heal. By denying your mind any destructive potential and reinstating its purely constructive powers, you place yourself in a position to undo the level of confusion of others. The message you then give to them is the truth that their minds are singularly constructive and their miscreations cannot hurt them. By affirming this, you release the mind from overvaluing its own learning device and restore the mind to its true position as the learner.
It should be emphasized again that the body does not learn any more than it creates. As a learning device, it merely follows the learner. But if it is falsely endowed with self-initiative, it becomes a serious obstruction to the very learning it should facilitate. Only the mind is capable of illumination. Spirit is already illuminated, and the body in itself is too dim. The mind, however, can bring its illumination to the body by recognizing that it is not the learner and is therefore unamenable to learning. The body is, however, easily brought into alignment with a mind that has learned to look beyond it toward the light.
Corrective learning always begins with the awakening of spirit and the turning away from the belief in physical sight. This often entails fear, because you are afraid of what your spiritual sight will show you. I said before that the Holy Spirit cannot see error, and is capable only of looking beyond it to the defense of atonement. There is no doubt that this may produce discomfort. Yet the discomfort is not the final outcome of the perception. When the Holy Spirit is permitted to look upon the defilement of the altar, he also looks immediately toward the atonement. Nothing he perceives can induce fear. Everything that results from the spiritual awareness is merely channelized toward correction. Discomfort is aroused only to bring the need for correction into awareness.
The fear of healing arises in the end from an unwillingness to accept unequivocally that healing is necessary. What the physical eye sees is not corrective, nor can error be corrected by any device that can be seen physically. As long as you believe in what your physical sight tells you, your attempts at correction will be misdirected. The real vision is obscured because you cannot endure to see your own defiled altar. But since the altar has been defiled, your state becomes doubly dangerous unless it is perceived.
Healing is an ability that developed after the separation, before which it was unnecessary. Like all aspects of the belief in space and time, it is temporary. However, as long as time persists, healing is needed as a means of protection. This is because healing rests on charity, and charity is a way of perceiving the perfection of another, even if you cannot perceive it in yourself. Most of the loftier concepts of which you are capable now are time-dependent. Charity is really a weaker reflection of a much more powerful love encompassment that is far beyond any form of charity you can conceive of as yet. Charity is essential to right-mindedness in the limited sense in which it can now be attained.
Charity is a way of looking at another as if he has already gone far beyond his actual accomplishments in time. Since his own thinking is faulty, he cannot see the atonement for himself, or he would have no need of charity. The charity that is accorded him is both an acknowledgement that he needs help and a recognition that he will accept it. Both of these perceptions clearly imply their dependence on time, making it apparent that charity still lies within the limitations of this world. I said before that only revelation transcends time. The miracle as an expression of charity can only shorten it. It must be understood, however, that wherever you are, wherever you offer a miracle to another, you are shortening the suffering of both of you. This corrects retroactively as well as progressively.
Okay. Do we have any comments on this?
There's a lot there.
There is a lot there. And I went ahead and went through it without stopping because it comes down to several different points. Let's start with what we just read of charity. What is charity according to the Course in Miracles?
I think it's being of service to one another.
Yeah, it is. Not necessarily money-wise or anything else, but charity really is how you look at another. You need to look at another as if he has already gone far beyond his actual accomplishments, meaning you look at him as he is perfect. That's charity. What else is in here that's really, that affected somebody or hit somebody? Where was an aha moment for you? One of the lines in here that just reiterated what we have been talking about is in 7, number 8, discomfort is aroused only to bring the need for correction into your awareness. Discomfort meaning fear, any type of pain, sadness. Those are signals that we get where we need to take a look at what's going on with us, what we need to correct. Miracles are expressions of miracle-mindedness, which is also right-mindedness. And what is right-mindedness?
Being at peace.
Right.
Realizing your connection to Source.
Exactly. All right. Can you do it by yourself? Can you get through
source.
Anything by yourself?
Not without Source.
Right. Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. If you as it says in number 4, the healer who relies on his own readiness is endangering his understanding. Whenever we think we can do anything alone, without Source or without each other, that's when we can really get off the track. And it's not a weakness. Please understand, this it is not a weakness to say, God, I need your help. You don't need to take all the medications to make the body better thinking that that's what's going to do it. It's really okay to finally say, okay, God, I can't do this by myself. Show me a different way of doing this. Let me see this differently. I'm miscreating what atonement is. I haven't been using my corrective learning. So please help me out here. When the Holy Spirit is permitted to look upon the defilement of the altar, Holy Spirit, I can't do this by myself. I've screwed it up.
He also looks immediately toward the atonement. Ah, of course. I am one with you. Together we can do anything. All right. Any questions or comments? Okay. Let's move on to, I think we can get through A, special principles of miracle workers, before we need to stop, and we will stop at fear and conflict. So let's go ahead. Who's the last next reader?
I think it seems to be back around to me again.
You're right.
The miracle abolishes the need for lower order concerns. Since it is an out-of-pattern time interval, the ordinary considerations of time and space do not apply. When you perform a miracle, I will arrange both time and space to adjust to it.
Okay. Yeah, let's go ahead and just do one of these each. So, okay. A clear distinction between what is created and what is made is essential. All forms of healing rest on this fundamental correction in level perception. What is created and what is made is essential. Need to know the difference. Okay. 13. Nanette, I think that's you.
That's number 3 in our book, Nanette.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
I was reading on mute.
Okay.
Never confuse right and wrong-mindedness. Responding to any form of error with anything except a desire to heal is an expression of this confusion.
Right.
The miracle is always a denial of this error and an affirmation of the truth. Only right-mindedness can correct in a way that has any real effect. Pragmatically, what has no real effect has no real existence. Its effect, then, is emptiness. Being without substantial content, it lends itself to projection.
The level adjustment power of the miracle induces the right perception for healing. Until this has occurred, healing cannot be understood. Forgiveness is an empty gesture unless it entails correction. Without this, it is essentially judgmental rather than healing.
Miracle-minded forgiveness is only correction. It has no element of judgment at all. The statement, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," in no way evaluates what they do. It is an appeal to God to heal their mind. There is no reference to the outcome of the error. That does not matter.
The injunction, "Be of one mind," is a statement for relation readiness. For revelation readiness, sorry. My request, "Do this in remembrance of me," is the appeal for cooperation from miracle workers. The two statements are not in the same order of reality. Only the latter involves the awareness of time, since to remember is to recall the past and the present. Time is under my direction, but timelessness belongs to God. In time, we exist for and with each other. In timelessness, we coexist with God.
You can do much on behalf of your own healing and that of others if, in a situation calling for help, you think of it this way: I am here only to be truly helpful. I am here to represent Him who sent me. I do not have to worry about what to say or what to do, because He who sent me will direct me. I am content to be wherever He wishes, knowing He goes there with me. I will be healed as I let Him teach me to heal.
Beautiful. And my suggestion is everybody copy down that little prayer right there, stick it up on your wall, and refer to it in times of confusion.
Or bears.
Exactly. Or bears. I think I'm memorizing this one. All right. Well, thank you very much. It was beautiful and insightful, especially for me today. I appreciate everyone's time, and I've enjoyed this hour.
Well, thank you all for coming together again. Couldn't do it without you. Stay in love, everyone, and remember that you are here as a being of light, representing God, who is your inner divine, who is one with you. Remember, you are not alone. Every choice you make is either a choice out of love or fear. And stay in love, everyone. And we will see you again next Wednesday when we talk about fear and conflict. All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.